that was about it, where I had been put on salary. And at that time, I was the only salaried woman in our department. Now, that doesn't mean that I was the only one in the division. And it doesn't mean that I was in management. I wasn't. I was under the EAA, the ESG, I guess it was by then, which was unique, I believe, because I think most companies, if their women are salaried, they are in management. But Lockheed has all these, well, I don't know, engineers and technical personnel that may be on salary, and they're sort of lead men or lead people, and they don't have quite all the advantages that the executive people do. On the other hand, they have another advantage that some of them found out in 1973, I think it was, or 74, when they see the management people can be laid off without just arbitrarily if they need to cut back. The salaried people under ESG cannot be.
The ESG stood for what?
Engineers and Scientists Guild. Engineers and Scientists Guild. It's the Engineers Union at Lockheed. Now, it was formed under the EAA, Engineers and Architects Association, back about 1944, because I didn't think too much about it then, except the reason they gave for forming it at that time was that some of the tool planners that were covered by the shop union were making more money than the engineers. So the engineers decided to organize. And incidentally, it's in the paper today or yesterday about the settlement of the shop union. And my, when I think how much they're getting an hour now, it seems fantastic. But anyway, there were advantages to be to being salaried under the ESG, because I still got as good, we still came into the same retirement program, and we got the same kind of sick leave as all salaried people got the same on some of those. And then, of course, I didn't have to clock in anymore. Not that I wasn't usually there on time, but in case of emergency, I wasn't docked for, and it was, then of course, there was some prestige, but I was just thinking, the day I got, they put us on salary, now they put some men on too, that night, it was Friday night, and the stores were open in Glendale, and I went shopping. And I thought, well, I ought to do something to celebrate, and I didn't have anybody I could really tell, because it would sound like I was bragging, and I kept it as, I didn't flaunt it out at work, and some of them didn't even know it for a month that I was on salary. So I stopped in this little store, and they had some earrings on sale. I think they were only 2.5, but they were pretty then. And, of course, at that time, women wore earrings, well, you know, a lot. So I bought a pair of earrings. But I didn't have anybody that I could, I thought, well, I ought to celebrate some way, but there was nobody to celebrate with, you know, that kind of thing. I don't mean that I didn't have any friends, but I didn't want to tell my friends on the outside, because it would sound like I was bragging. And so that's how I celebrated getting on salary. I bought them.
Did you finally share your excitement with somebody?
Well, later, my friends knew I was on salary. I told them, but I didn't want to, we didn't celebrate anything. No, but I just thought, that thought just crossed my mind that night, that here I was happy about it, but there was nobody I could really tell about.
Why did you feel it would be a problem if you told anyone who worked at Lockheed?
Well, for one thing, I didn't want to brag. I knew that there would be other women in the department who would right away make a fuss, and I found out later that some of them did. But it was still several years before we had any more salaried people in this department. Now they got more of them in the same division. I know that you'd always hear whenever anyone got put on salary, then a week or two later you'd hear them say, boy, since he got that oval badge, you know. So I was determined they weren't going to say that about me.
Now, of course, once you came to work, though, with your badge, everyone would immediately know.
They didn't pay that much attention because instead of wearing it up here, I wore it down here. I guess I was wearing a suit to work most of the time, or else a dress with a belt. So I wore it down here, and I took it off as soon as I got out the gate. And so the people I rode with didn't even know it till someone told one of them.
Well, it must have been difficult to have this exciting news and not have anyone.
There was a lot of, they weren't very anxious about putting women on salary.
Now, how did the transition actually occur? You said there were several men in your department that were salaried at the same time, too.
Well, they called a meeting and said they had decided to put all the lead men. See, I had been a lead man. And at that time, I didn't make a fuss about not being I didn't care what they called me. They decided to put all the lead men on salary and make us senior analysts. And so, because I was one of them, I think there were three men got on salary. Because I remember when we went over to have our badges changed, and what in the world did they say? I know that this one fellow and I that worked for the same supervisor, we went over and when we got over, they were kidding about how these other two got over there fast. They said, well, they ran over. And we walked. So there was quite a bit of excitement about it, putting so many. Oh, whenever anybody got put on salary that hadn't been before, why, you know, people always set up and noticed. Because you got a different kind of a badge, too, that oval badge.
Now, so it sounds like it was seen both as an increase in status and an ability to move up a different ladder, too.
Yes, because once you were on salary, there was an opportunity to move up a little faster. Well, they used to say that nobody ever got the top of the salary classification, and I don't believe very many ever did. But with hourly, there was that top. When you got to tops, that was it.
Now, do you recall what did your wage work out to in terms of your hourly wage? Was there an actual increase, or did it average the same?
No, I got an increase, but it was a small increase. And I'm going to look that up. It seems like that it actually worked out to only about $2 a week more. Well, I know it didn't work out to very much. Mm. Maybe it was $5 a week. I know the fellows kind of complained that they thought they should have had when they were giving us this additional responsibility and putting us on salary, that we should have had a better raise, but I didn't squawk about it.
So the value was less in terms of, and the meaning less in terms of a monetary gain as much as a more tangible kind of gain from it.
Well, less in immediate monetary gain, but there were other things, though. Like I say, you no longer would be docked if you went to the dentist, and you got into this better retirement plan, and you got more sick leave. So I think at that time the salaried people got 12 sick leave days a year, and the hourly got 6.
And how about vacation time with that?
No, that was no different. As even when I left, that was based on years there. Oh. It had nothing to do with whether you were salaried or hourly.
Now, did your classification and title change too?
Yes. I had been, let's see, what had they called us, a spare parts analyst or something, and we became senior analysts. That's what we've called. I think we were called senior, oh dear. I don't remember. I just remember, maybe we were called senior catalog analysts. I think they called us that because some of us thought later they shouldn't have put catalog in there because we no longer, those books were no longer called catalogs. They were called IPB. So I think finally that was changed to technical publications analyst, senior or something like that. It went through quite a lot of things, but we always spoke of ourselves, and everybody always spoke of us as a senior analyst.
And but your work actually did not change.
Not too much, because we had been doing, some of us, it did for some, but for some of us, we'd been doing about the same thing anyway. Although it seemed like after that we did talk to vendors more, where before we hadn't. But that was one of the reasons they wanted to put us on salary, was because, there might be meetings we had to go to, and almost everybody else would be on salary. And, of course, not so much for me, but for some of the fellows. They didn't want to have a problem getting them back in the gate if they had to go out to lunch with some of the Navy people. I never really came up with that. I more talked to vendors. I can remember talking to the Bendix representative, and who in the world was there was an outfit down here in Glendale that made our survival kits, because soon after that, if not about that time, they gave me what they called the equipment books or little books, and I had a smaller crew, but we had a different kind of work, and in some respects it was considered a little more, precise. Our books had, I know, they had to correspond. We developed the breakdown that was used by the people in the engineering department for their overhaul manuals. Mm. And so we had to take things apart in disassembly sequence. And after we got it apart, the men in my group then, by then I was lead over these people, after these men made the breakdown, then they had to have a conference with the man in engineering to make sure he agreed on it, because we developed the art for those manuals that were made in engineering.
Oh, I see.
So we met a lot of the fellows in engineering, and I seemed, as far as I know, I got along with them fine. I know I can remember this one fellow used to always say, you know, I count on you, Frieda, and I mean, I had, there was this one fellow that he did an excellent job of breakdown. I think he, not that he knew more than these engineers, but he had the patience to figure out why the screw came, if the screw would come off and take this part off before that. So he developed quite a reputation. I was fortunate to have him because it made my work much easier.
Now, how many then were in the crew under you at that point?
Well, I don't remember exactly. It usually ranged from 5 to 10.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes if I had quite a few tech manuals scheduled to come out at that time, I still have the T-33 now, that's right. If I had quite a few to come out, sometimes they would bring in fellows temporarily from the other groups, but usually my group was small because where my supervisor said I had special projects, and we did do the aircraft manuals, which the other groups did, were very much done to one specification, but the manuals that were done in my group, and which I had to make the estimates for, and so I had to know all those specs, We did them to different specifications because we'd get some that, oh heavens. I know we got one that was a real oddball, but we did it. I made estimates, and then I was responsible. I was supposed to check the work of those fellas, and I made the schedule. And while of course the supervisor is always ultimately responsible to see that these manuals were out on schedule and accurate and inspected, mm-hmm. was my responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you say you made estimates, Rita, was this in terms of time or cost?
It was in terms of time and material, because price estimating did all the...
Oh, I see.
But we had to... they would not make them without knowing. We sent what we called a head sheet over to price estimating, and then they added on... they'd come out with new hourly rates, and particularly every time there was a new contract, union contract signed, these rates included the proposed salary rates, and they figured it all. Someone in price estimating would figure that out, what the rate should be. Also, there was the amount of profit that the Air Force would allow, and what in the world, there was something else that went in there besides profit. But we had to figure out the material costs. In other words, how many negatives would there be, because they were a certain price, and how many illustrations. Mm-hmm. And then you see, we'd have to get the illustration hours from the illustration supervisor, but we always had to tell him the difficulty of the illustration so that he could mm-hmm. estimate how many hours and all that. There was a form to fill out for all that, and we had to put down the specifications because they weren't all the same, and how many days after we received the contract we could mm-hmm. get it out and all that business.
Now, your job as lead or supervisor over this crew would have been identical to the job of the other leads. Over the other crews. The work
yes.
itself might be
yes.
different, but
yeah,
the supervisory function would
yes,
be the same.
Yes, it was very much the same. And the others in our IPB group were all men mm-hmm. that did that. Oh, and there was one thing I remember when we got new desks. And first of all, at that time, the fellas, the hourly people, had these... big boards that they worked on, you know, to spread out the prints. So all the senior analysts got a desk and one of these nice big chairs. Well, that big chair was too big for me, so I let one of the men in the group have that chair, and I know he appreciated that because he liked, well, it was a nice, comfortable mm-hmm. chair, you know, a big padded chair, but my word, it wasn't comfortable for me. I always... sat on a stenographer's chair.
What was the reaction of the men in your crew as well as the men in the other crews when you became salaried?
Well, it's hard to say. I think some of them didn't mind at all. I think some of them did, but they didn't say anything.
And how about of your supervisor?
No, I think he thought it was time. He was for it mm-hmm. by then. That was my immediate supervisor. Now, this section supervisor that wouldn't let me use my name, but had to use my initials, he at least gave lip service to the fact that he was overjoyed to do it, whether he was.
Now, is this that same Harry?
No, by then Harry had another group. This was J.C., and but he was just about the same about women. He was the one that told me that he couldn't tell these fellas they were going to have a little girl for their boss. And I said, well, I wouldn't be their boss. I said, you know, you and Jim, the supervisor, the boss, I said, I'd just be checking your work and that kind of thing. But he was the one that, there again, to get on salary, the union called him. This was, of course, quite a few months before they made all of us on salary, but told him that the next time they put anybody on salary in there, that he would have to find a better excuse than that I was a woman to not put me on salary. So two times the union did come to my rescue. No grievance was filed, and I figured my work must have been all right, because if it hadn't been, they would have given all these reasons to the union but they hadn't. They never said that my work wasn't satisfactory. They just said it was because I was a woman.
Now, on the second case, did you go and talk with the union at all?
Just over the telephone. Mm-hmm. Just over the telephone. And the fellow that was our union chairman knew this fellow, and I think he talked to him too. And I remember when I talked to him, he said, "Well, we'll see what we can do."
Why do you think that the union was so supportive? Because even, I mean, in those days, the unions weren't terribly helpful always about women.
Well, you remember I told you I had worked with some of those union people, not even knowing they were union. And so they thought my work was all right because I had really helped them. See, I had all this information that they didn't know where to go. It would have taken them a long time to go and find. And they found out that what I had was accurate. And then later on, they got a new... This was several years later, when doing these books that I was telling you about, we worked with the union chairman, and several of those fellows knew that I had the information I had given them was correct, and besides that, my supervisor couldn't come up with anything tangible against my work. And, of course, nobody's perfect, but then he didn't. They didn't find anything wrong.
Was their argument based primarily on the issue of seniority?
That was part of it, that I had been in there so much longer than these fellows. See, I had been doing that work since about 1946, and this was 57. And there were fellows that had come in. Maybe they'd been there two or three years, of course. Maybe they'd come from the service, but I just begin to think I'd been passed over enough. Mm-hmm. So like you'll read about that lady there, it was the same idea. And very often, I would help train those fellas, and then first thing I know, they were on salary, and they were good, and they deserved it, but I thought it was my turn.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember how you approached the union about the issue, or anything that sparked it?
I think that time when Harry, that was several years ago, said there wouldn't be any women analysts, and I called the union then, and then when it came to this, when they had this, created this salary job, see, they put, I think, three fellows on salary about 6 months or more before they put the rest of us. I was a lead man then. And I went in and talked to my supervisor and told him that as long as they were, that was the section supervisor. Oh, we had all layers of supervision. Boy, we had plenty of that. And told him that since I was the senior analyst, I thought I should be one. Well, he came up with that about being a woman, you know. So I called the president of the union and talked to him. But of course by then they'd already put the paperwork through creating it, and if I recall correctly, see that's been a long time, section supervisor told him that they'd already that's as many as they were going to have, and they had already put them through. So of course the union didn't want to knock them down. Not that it could have, but anyway, I think then, I know that he said, let me talk to him. And then later, when the next time they made it, I got it. So I think he told him then that the next, I believe I was told that, that Ignatowski told JC that the next time he made any senior analysts, he better make me one of them, or, well, I don't know if he told him I'd file a grievance, but he told him that he better find another excuse other than that I was a woman. Otherwise, he should make... No, I never found those fellows in the ESG, they didn't seem to have a strange attitude about a woman being taking a job. They seemed to think if a person could do the job, that the person should have a classification. Of course, I don't know. By then, things were changing a little. They weren't quite as bad as they had been. But I never found any of those union stewards in the ESG to feel that women shouldn't have a job.